Hey everyone, John Wertheim here. It is this week's Sports Illustrated / Tennis Channel Tennis Podcast. Our guest this week, Taylor Fritz. Taylor Fritz just turned 21, and as a birthday present, he got a new career-high ranking, up to number 49 inside the top 50. He is now headed to Milan for the ATP Next Gen event. Good conversation with an up-and-coming player now in the top 50. Talk about Taylor's goals for 2019, which are ambitious, his disdain for mid-match coaching, which he shares with some tennis observers, self-included, and what he's going to do this tennis off-season. Nice conversation with an up-and-coming player. Here he is, Taylor Fritz.
Taylor Fritz, how are you? How you doing?
I'm doing all right.
Where are we getting you? Where are you today?
I'm at my house in LA.
You're not in Milan, Italy. When do you head over there?
First thing tomorrow morning.
First thing tomorrow morning, you're gonna cross a country, cross an ocean, and get to this event. So first off, have you been managing things like travel and jet lag? How big an adjustment has that been?
It's not too bad anymore. I think because it's my third year on tour, and I also travel a bit, as well for the juniors. I think I'm finally kind of getting used to it.
You got a good jet lag trick?
Not really. I think I like to just. I mean, it really depends. If I'm at a place where I'm falling asleep too early, then I'll probably just try like an energy drink, like maybe have like a Red Bull just to keep me up. And then, because the number one rule is just like once you get to wherever you are, that first day is the most crucial day. you have to stay up to like 10 that day.
Exactly. You got to grind through that first day, and then you'll be okay.
You absolutely have to stay up till 10 or 11, and then you'll make it. But if you're weak the first day and fall asleep at a bad time, then you're in trouble for the rest of the trip.
See, it's a service-oriented interview we do here. Let me ask you this. You started the year outside the top 100. You're now top 50, headed to Milan. January 1st, do you sign up for this year? I mean, is this happy with how things have gone?
I'd say I'm pretty happy with the year. I definitely like look back at a lot of matches. I feel like maybe I could have won, but then when I think about that, I also think about a lot of matches that I probably shouldn't have won that I pulled out. So overall, I have to say I'm pretty happy to finish inside the top 50. It's I went almost 2 years without having a career high, and so now I just hit a new career high. So I guess that feels really nice. So I'm glad I at least was able to do that this year.
I think if you didn't come close, you were off by a couple of days. I think you hit your career high on your 21st birthday. Read into that what you will. Wait, go back to what you said before, because I think players say that a lot, and they talk about the matches they should have won and couldn't close out. When those matches happen, what's usually the decisive factor? I mean, is it for serves? Is it just rally balls you wouldn't ordinarily miss? What separates
points.
Us?
It's big points.
Big points?
It's getting a little nervous at an important time, not winning a point you maybe could have won, not taking a chance you had. And then I look back at the ones I probably shouldn't have won that I did end up winning, and it's the same thing. It's just those matches I won the big points, and so it's important though to think about the matches you also probably shouldn't have won, because it makes you feel a bit better about the other ones.
So what's the difference in those matches?
What do you mean?
The matches where you look back and you say, "Boy, he really had me dead to rights. I was lucky to get through that one." What's the difference in the matches you do pull out?
Definitely just like staying positive and like not giving up. I know for a fact I wouldn't have won any of those matches if I kind of just like threw in the towel, which I'm sure a lot of people might have done in some of those situations I was in. U.S. Open, for example, in my first round match. But then also, of course, then also winning the big points. It's winning the big points and then not getting too down yourself, not giving up, And but yeah, I mean, that's the biggest thing in any close match. It's just winning the important points.
You mentioned the U.S. Open. I remember the match you had against Thiem, which was, you know, a high-quality match against a top 10 guy. At this point in your career, you play a good match, competitive match against a guy of that caliber. You take a set off him, you lose in four. What are you feeling walking off the court?
I have to say, I was probably a little bit disappointed because I had a lot of chances in that match. You know, I won the first set, and then I was up a break. I believe I was up a break two different times in the third set. So, you know, there's really not much of an excuse for why I wouldn't have a 2-set-1 lead in that match. So it was disappointing, and I'd lost to him the year before also in four sets, and I had, I think, triple set point to go into five sets the year before. So it's a little disappointing because I felt like I had a good chance. I felt like I was playing well. I felt like it was a good opportunity for me to have a big win.
One of your
beat a top player, but
one of your coaches, one of your coaches, Paul Anacone. I don't know if he's ever told you this, but you ask him, what is Roger Federer's greatest asset, and he says short-term memory. He said Roger, you know, yep, plays a bad point and he forgets about it. Plays a bad match and by dinner time he's smiling. What's your short-term memory like? I mean, how long are you sort of eaten up by losses or riding high after wins? What's your short-term memory like?
It's all right. I mean, some losses hurt a lot more than others. Some take longer to get over. I always tell Paul when he tells me that, you know, if I was number one in the world, I wouldn't really get too worked up about a loss either, but
exactly.
But it's getting better. I think it's important to care though after you lose. You know, I think when I first got on tour, some of the losses cut me up a lot more than they do now. I think I've kind of got used to handling it typically because when I first came on, you know, I came on the tour, I was kind of just playing a lot of juniors and then some challengers, and I wasn't typically, I guess, used to losing all that much. And then, you know, you get pretty used to it on the tour when you're a young guy just coming in.
Well, so, we keep going with that because I remember Stevie Johnson saying the same thing. He said, you know, I'd go months and months and months in college and I wouldn't drop a set, and then all of a sudden I can lose four times in a month. What is it like adjusting to not taking the trophy week in, week out?
It's just like, well, it's because you don't have those losses all the time. So when you do have those losses, they sting a bit more, and you feel it a bit more. And then when you keep getting those losses, I guess you can let it hurt the confidence a bit because you're just not used to it. But I guess over time you kind of get used to it, and you build that kind of short memory,
right,
that we were talking about. So I think it's definitely something you need to kind of, like, almost learn or, like, adapt to when you get on tour. It's definitely something that
it's an adjustment, though, right?
Yeah, it's definitely an adjustment. It's definitely something you learn, like, when you're on tour, especially when you're used to winning so much, like Stevie was in college or a lot of the young guys are in juniors.
So you're headed to Milan, and last year, I don't know how closely you followed the event. I'd say overall success, but a lot of innovations, you know, the tiebreak at three games and no lets, and I think there's no ad scoring.
Three or four?
I think it's first to four games with a tiebreak at three. So,
oh, really? I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you're preempting my question exactly. How much have they told you about? You know, you're going to have to ration your energy differently and look at challenges differently. How much have they kind of prepped you for what you're about to face?
I don't really know what's going on, to be honest. I just know the format of the games. I feel like there's going to be, if it's three out of five of the short sets, I feel like it's going to be the same duration of a two out of three. So I feel like energy, like conservation-wise, it's probably the same. Shot clock, we've been playing with that a lot. The towel racks, instead of like having the ball kids bring the towels, probably a good change. I like that.
No lets? How are you with that?
I don't know about that one, but we'll see if I can remember to play lets when we get there. I really think I'm for sure gonna let one go past me and not even realize I'm doing it.
No ad scoring. You're okay with that?
I love that, actually, just because it really ups the pressure points and like the key moments of the match. Like, it makes you play more big points, and I like that.
Join in this week's debate in tennis circles. How are you with mid-match coaching? You like it?
For it becoming like a normal thing on tour, I couldn't be more against it.
All right. Oh, my man, I like to hear that. Why do you say that?
I mean, tennis is an individual sport, and I think a big part of the sport is figuring it out mentally by yourself.
Oh, man.
You shouldn't have someone helping you. I think the mental part of tennis is huge, and it's, like I said, it's an individual sport. You should have to figure it out by yourself. That's part of the game.
But I thought all the players wanted mid-match coaching. What's your sense among your peers? I mean, I agree wholeheartedly with you. What's your sense, sort of straw poll in the locker room?
I feel like most of the men don't want it. I feel like on the men's side, they don't want it. And I feel like some of the people that like do want it, they're more like, they're not like strongly, I want it. They're like, I don't really care. Like a lot of people that say they don't mind it, it's more so they're like, oh, it happens anyway, so why not? Which is also kind of true. But
I mean, I think to that point, I think we need to draw a distinction between a coach, you know, hey, you should, giving you a little hand signal, hey, you should go to the net more, versus coming out at a changeover and giving you a 90-second therapy session.
I don't think there should be any kind of coaching. I think it's, I, like I said before, tennis is an individual sport. You should have to figure it out yourself.
Music to my ears. But talk about your coaching, though. I even on the ATP website, you have two, David Nenkin and Paul Anacode, both get name checked. And I do think we're seeing more and more of this co-coach situation. How does that work with you?
Well, I mean, it worked. I think more people are doing co-coaches and that, because people play such a long year, it's really tough to find someone who's going to travel with them every single week. Especially if you're going to hire, like, especially certain coaches, like, they can't do a whole year. So it's important to have someone that kind of helps you training, and two coaches that work together, and they kind of trade off on weeks like I'm doing. And it works really well. You know, Paul comes out a lot when I'm in L.A. with me and Nankin, and we do a lot of work. And then, you know, we kind of split it up. Paul does some weeks, Nankin does the rest, and it's a good system we got going.
What's the most important thing Paul's imparted on you?
It's been a lot, but I think he's really helped me with, like, I guess my thought process of, like, trusting. He always says trusting the process. Like, trusting that I'm going to keep improving, not getting, you know, too upset in practice. I'm someone who gets really frustrated when it comes to practice, because I always want to be doing everything right, and, you know, I'll be really calm and relaxed on the court, but in practice I'll get pretty upset. And I think he's helped me a lot with kind of just managing my expectations for myself. I think that's a good way to put it. Managing expectations and keeping my mentality the right way for moving forward in my career.
What are your expectations? I mean, I said, what kind of year was this? And you said, yeah, it was pretty good. Players hate it when you ask for ranking goals, but what, you know, 2019 is a good year if what happens. What are your expectations?
I really expect myself to finish 2019 in, like, the top 30. Like, I really, My goals are so much higher than that, but I think that's my expectation, at least. And my goal going into this year was to be seated at the Australian Open 2019. And I honestly, if I just, like, literally just a couple of those, like, big matches, because once you get, you know, so deep into the tournament, the points just basically double.
Right, right.
But, like, Shanghai win an extra match. You know, Basel, I was in the quarters. I could have made semis, win an extra match there. Like, it's really not far off. It's just a couple matches here and there. But, I'm definitely looking to finish next year in the top 30. And, you know, a good goal for myself would probably be finish top 20.
Top 20 goal for 2019.
Yeah, I think that's pretty reasonable.
You said to me 2 years ago, I asked you sort of what the biggest adjustment was, and you said, I don't know if you remember this. You want to guess what you said? This was 2 years ago, so, you know, you would have been 18, 19 years old. You want to guess what you said?
Going into the pros?
Yeah, you want to guess what you said, or you want me to tell you?
I bet I said it was just the physicality of the game, no?
Yeah, you said exactly. You said leg strength, and it's just a total different league. It's exactly right. You said just completely different level of physicality, and right now I need my legs to get stronger. You feel you've done that?
Oh yeah, for sure. I've been working really hard in the gym with everyone at Carson. I've been working with Brent Salazar lately in Orlando. I've been taking some trips up to Orlando literally just to do crazy fitness sessions for 2 weeks and like not play that much tennis. And I'm gonna be doing that again this off season. So I think I definitely have made a lot of big improvements when it comes to my my strength and my body.
Saying you just turned 21 a few days ago, which I think, what would that make you, you'd be a junior in college? Is that right?
I think I'd be going into my junior year.
Yeah, right. You'd probably be a first semester. But
this would be the beginning of my junior year. That sounds about right.
So you are leading a very different life from your peer. You know, you tick off Basel and Asia, and now you're going to Milan. I mean, what do you see as the biggest sacrifice you've made?
Personally, I don't feel like I've really sacrificed too much, you know? I mean, I guess you could say, like, just, like, the regular, like, college experience, like, having fun and stuff like that. But honestly, I'm having way more fun doing what I'm doing and having my career. So I don't think I've sacrificed much, you know, just a lot of, I don't know, maybe just a lot of the hard work I've done I could have spent just, like, doing nothing. But aside from that, like, aside from, you know, all the time I put on the court and in the gym, I don't feel like I've missed out on many, many experiences.
What's the level of, how do you characterize your levels of friendship on tour these days? I mean, what's it like for you socially?
Good. I have a lot of very close friends. A lot of the young Americans, you know, I'm hoping to see more of them playing similar schedules to me because, you know, that'd make it a lot more enjoyable for me when I'm on the road. But it's good to have Francis around all the time, and now Mackie's starting to play the same schedule. It was good having him in Asia, and then, you know, I'm hoping to see Riley, Tommy, Kozlov. I'm seeing a bit of Mo lately, you know, so I'm excited to be hanging out with more of those guys. But, you know, anytime I'm at a tournament with them, it's always pretty enjoyable.
You've always got guys to eat dinner with and hang out with during the dead time?
Most of the time, you know. Whenever I do, it's always a much more fun week.
How do you grade yourself handling work-life balance these days?
What do you mean?
You've got obligations beyond hitting a yellow tennis ball. You've got a family. You're based in California. You're traveling. How are you handling the balance? That, you know, we all deal with it.
Yeah, I think I'm doing a pretty good job. I think, you know, I try to never neglect my my tennis too much because it just makes me feel like it just makes me feel pretty bad if I feel like I'm not doing everything I can for my my career. But then I really spend the rest of my time doing as much as I can for the family and, you know, and all that. So I think I'm doing a pretty good job of hitting both I guess that was the best way to put it, like doing a good job of prioritizing everything I need to prioritize and really taking care of the most important things and parts of my life to the best degree I can.
It's a game we all play. You're shutting it down after Milan?
Yep.
And then what do the next 6 weeks look like after you get back from Italy?
My plan is to take just a week off and just be with my family after Milan. And that's just like my week of doing nothing. But to be honest, like, if I sit around for 2 or 3 days, like, I'm gonna want to do something, so maybe I'll start practicing, to be honest. But then after that week's up, then that's gonna be Thanksgiving week. I'm gonna start training through Thanksgiving week at Carson, just gym and tennis. Obviously taking Thanksgiving Day off, and then straight from there, I'm gonna go to Orlando for 2 weeks. Gonna do a week of just straight gym and fitness, and then maybe the next week it's going to be more gym and tennis, and then I'm going to go back to Carson, gym and tennis for another week. So those 2 weeks are definitely going to be like the toughest weeks for me. So I think I'm going to be doubling up on fitness and tennis each day, and then I'm going to cool it down 1 week of just lighter in the gym and tennis, and then I'm going to go off to Brisbane. So I'm definitely having a longer off season than I typically do, because I really want to build the body and be as ready as possible for the next year.
A whole 7 weeks, you're telling me.
I think it's 6 weeks, but yeah, I'm gonna.
Yeah. This,
I had it really planned out because I want to make sure I nail it this off season.
Yeah, I mean it's funny because you always hear players say that. I really need to do what I have to do and get in my work in the off season, and then you realize you're talking about a month and a half. This is a sport that doesn't sleep.
It goes so quick. Mm-hmm. It really goes so quick.
And you got the holidays baked in too.
Yeah, exactly. It's crazy.
All right. You've got one more tournament to play. Good luck over there. Use that towel rack and don't change your stance on mid-match coaching.
No, that'll never change.
Good luck over there. Good luck top 20 in 2019. You heard it here first.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Taylor. Good talking. All right. Thanks to Taylor Fritz for spending some time on the podcast before he departs to Milan for the next gen event. Thanks, as always, to our trusty producer, Jamie Lasanti, who does excellent work. I am out of the office today inside the Sausage Factory. We are crashing a TV piece, so Jamie and I will reconvene next week, but we're going to have a short outro. Some condolences to pass on to the family of Todd Reed, the former Australian junior standout who lost his life this week, and as well to the Gimelstab family, Barry Gimelstab, a tennis fixture for the last quarter century or so, passed away in New Jersey a few days ago, and condolences to the whole family, including Justin, my Tennis Channel colleague. Next week, we will discuss London, the year end, what's happened to Jack Sock, Federer, Nadal, Djokovic taking stock of their year. We'll have some preview work. We will have a special Hall of Famer guest, I'm told, and more tennis talk. So short podcast this week. We'll have a longer one next week. Jamie and I will be back together. Thanks for listening. Thanks for your suggestions. You can subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever podcasts are sold. Jamie likes to say, feel free to leave a review. Again, thanks to Taylor Fritz. Nice conversation with an up-and-coming player with some fairly fierce ambitions. Best of luck to him, and have a good week, everyone. Take care.